This episode of the Better Every Shift podcast is sponsored by The Fire Store. Learn more about getting the gear you need at prices you can afford by visiting thefirestore.com.
Everybody, welcome to the Better Every Shift podcast. My name is Aaron Zamzo. I'll be your host. I'm a fire lieutenant in Wisconsin, where it's freezing cold. And I've also been a writer here for the commander for about 12 years. Janelle Fosquette, editor-in-chief Fire Rescue One. How are you today?
I'm doing great. It's not freezing here, but it's very wet outside. It's been raining nonstop here in California.
Well, we're going to stick to the West Coast. We have some special guests with us today. Firefighter paramedic Alex Hughes and Captain Glompa. They had a pretty interesting call. Now we can say who it is. It was with Jeremy Renner, and they were first on scene with a call where he was run over by a snowcat. He was very badly injured. And these guys kind of got thrust into the limelight a little bit. I don't want to say that because it's, I know you're just doing your jobs, but we're happy to just talk about that incident and, you know, just about in general, what it's like to really be able to perform when you need to. I think that's the cool part here. And I'm proud and happy to have you guys here. Welcome, Alex and Greg. How are you guys?
Doing great. Doing well. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Well, we talked offhand and I said, well, you guys got to be C shifters. And of course I was wrong with that. You're on the B shift. Mm-hmm. And so you get a call for this. First of all, does this happen quite a bit? I mean, Truckee Meadows, where you guys are, you're in an environment where this kind of is, you know, maybe not necessarily expected, but you can understand why it happened. Has this ever kind of a call happened before?
No, not with a snowcat. I've never been on one.
Yeah, I've never been on one either.
Okay. You obviously get auto pids and things like that, but never snowcat.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So January 1st, 2023, tones go off. Cap, you're in the front seat probably reading the notes, right? And what are the notes coming up? What are you thinking?
I believe the notes that were coming up was just a snowplow versus a pedestrian. And we had a bunch of snow the night before. So the State Department of Transportation is trying to clear the highway. The highway was actually shut down. So we have our engine chained up. So we can't go more than 25 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. So we were thinking we get a lot of skiers and pedestrians along the highways when this happens. You know, there's great powder. They've got to get some skiing in. And we were all kind of thinking, hey, maybe somebody from the state hit somebody on the side of the road who wasn't supposed to be there. And then kind of as we got closer and noticed where it was, I was like, I think we were all thinking this could be him because we know where his house is.
Okay.
And there's a very small neighborhood there. There's only a few people. And he's probably the only one that has a snowcat.
Yeah. And so you guys, you roll up on scene, you know, from the firefighter's perspective, like all you heard was snowplow. So you got that in the back of your head. Like, where is that? Is that thing safe? What other things can be involved? Could be more than one person, right? Like you're thinking about a lot of different things at that point, you know? So you get on scene and now Alex, you're on the same engine together. You're riding in the back that
Correct.
Day, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you guys get there, kind of what was your first thought? What's our first action?
Well, I mean, when we rolled up, it was the snowcat was off to the side of the road and he was right in the middle of the road. So okay. We knew that the snowcat was stabilized. There was no cause for scene safety, anything like that. That was all secure. It was immediately apparent because there was a number of people around the patient. So it was essentially at that point, just go to work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Where do you begin on that call though?
Like, yeah,
right? There's a lot there.
I actually didn't even realize who he was until I introduced myself to try to get a level of consciousness. I said, you know, I want to get his response. Hey, what's your name? And that's when he introduced himself. Like, and that's when I realized who it was. I knew he lived there, but I for some reason, I wasn't thinking like he was that this could have been him.
Mm-hmm.
He was awake and conscious and speaking. He was able to introduce himself.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
And how did you realize kind of the gravity of his injuries at first, or kind of how long did it take to realize that?
Oh yeah, it was immediate that he was really very, very injured and definitely in a bad way. And just his level of response and stuff, like you could obviously tell he was in distress.
Yeah, so I'm an EMT. I would have said, but he's an Avenger, so it can't be too bad. That's what I would have thought. I would have been like, hey, he's fine. But you paramedics, you're a little more seasoned than us EMTs. So you're obviously doing your assessment. And then you guys had a rescue coming. Did you call for more people there at all, thinking that this might be serious enough for a helicopter, like a copter or something like that as well? Or
yeah, we called for a helicopter en route. I requested mutual aid from North Lake Tahoe Fire and Incline Village. We sent an engine as well as an ambulance. And mostly that was because I knew we were going to need help with this. I didn't know how bad it was. But it's always better to get people going and cancel them later if you don't need them. If you get on scene, you're already behind the curve, especially when the highway's shut down. Everybody's in chains, so they can only drive 5 miles or 25 miles an hour. And then half our golden hour is gone because just getting there. And then we got to worry about the trauma triad.
Right.
5 degrees outside. So I know you say it's cold in Wisconsin. I don't know about that. It was cold here that day. It was 5 degrees. At like 9, 10 in the morning, something like that. So the sun had been out, but there was just so much snow. It wasn't warming anything up yet.
Right. So all these things you're thinking of course, you mentioned the golden hour and you're triaging this as you go. Like you obviously, we go to level of consciousness, ABCs, but as you're going through, are you in, Alex, you're doing the patient assessment. I imagine at this point, Captain's thinking, hey, I got to get this, 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 and this. But Alex, as you're going down, you're like, okay, that arm's broken. That's gone. That's done. That's like, right. Like, I mean, take me through that process a little bit. As you kept going, kept finding more and more stuff.
Oh yeah. Immediately I recognized we have multi-system trauma. I mean, he's in a seriously bad way. But there's only so much I can do. And it's 5 degrees out. He's laying in the snow. He's already cold because it took us 20 minutes to get there. He's bundled appropriately for the weather, but his body, is obviously going into a state of shock. He's responding to the cold, all these things. And so it does limit kind of how well I can assess him, because I'm not going to start stripping off his clothes when it's already 5 degrees. He's freezing until we can get the ambulance there and get him in a position where we can get him more in a warm place to start doing the first assessment. But obviously, I want to make sure his ABCs are there and all those different things and do what I can while we're there on scene, because we were on scene for quite a bit of time before the ambulance showed up.
Yeah. What was the time frame that you guys think? I mean, when you're on scene, it feels like forever though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't want to make up numbers.
Yeah.
It feels like an eternity.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. Right. Especially because like you said, there's only so much you can do when you're looking at the scene, but in the back of your head, you're already thinking, I need to do this. First thing we do when we get to that in that med unit is boom, 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 boom. Right. Yes. That's the cool part about all this is, right, is we could talk and hopefully people are listening at home going, okay, well, what would I do in this position? If I was sitting in captain seat, if I'm Alex as the paramedic or the firefighter, what am I thinking at this point? And so you finally get to the point, med units there, you're briefing that crew at the same time. You're like, we got to go to work right here. Right. Mm-hmm. So do you guys hop in the back then as well and assist at that point?
Yeah. Yeah. And before that, I mean, I was able to provide some respiratory help. I gave him some oxygen, gave him some IV pain meds. I mean, we did start to warm him a little bit, or at least to try to stabilize his warmth. We did some things before that. And then once we got there, it's like, how are we going to move him? Because he did have multi-system trauma.
Oh, yeah.
So what's the most appropriate way of moving him? And obviously consider C-spine, all those different things. And we were on a slope. It was icy, snowy covered. All these things are playing into the scene and going through our head.
Did you guys do IO or you guys stick? You give him a stick?
IV.
Like right, really? Right there in the field, 5 degrees. Mm-hmm. First try, of course.
Yeah,
nice work. That's not easy either, right? This is kind of like a and that's the other cool part. When Janelle's like, hey, do you want to talk? I go, I certainly want to talk to these guys, because this is like a Super Bowl call. This is one that you talk about for a long time. Yeah. That if you don't practice your skills, this is when it comes out, right? This is why training is so imperative. And let me switch that a little bit. Cap, I know you're good because we talked offhand and I vetted you a little bit. We're like, so I'm sure, you know, you've done a training where you said, okay, this here's our training today. Someone's going to get hit by a bear cat, run over and lay in the middle of the road. Go, let's see what we do, right? You can't
prepare for that
at all, right? Like, yeah, but looking at it, are there things you guys would have done differently?
So, I mean, there were things that could have happened better, but that wasn't really anything we could do about it. Like our repeater was down, so our radios didn't work. So I had to go to my backup, which was my iPhone, put it on speaker to talk to dispatch to order resources. The highway being shut down, nothing we can do about that. Nothing we can do about having to use chains. No, I think it all went really well. I mean, Alex used to work at North Lake Tahoe, so he knew those guys already, but I hardly have ever worked with those guys. And I think we worked together seamlessly. I mean, I jumped in the driver's seat of the ambulance and drove it because now we have three paramedics in the back working with it, working on the patient.
Yeah.
And I don't think there is anything I would do differently. We tried to keep it quiet to protect his privacy as much as we could.
Well,
and he signed a HIPAA waiver saying we could talk about it. So that's the main reason we're able to say anything about it. But
right. Well, and that's
out there. They do what we did, you know, all the time, and they get no recognition for it.
Yeah. And I knew that was the next part. So you're like, but you still had other calls. And that's, I think, great for hopefully the public listens in a little bit and goes, okay, so you have this pretty, you know, traumatic injury. You do what you're going to do. You overcome the odds here, quite a few of them. You go back to the station and, you know, who's your rookie? Alex, are you the youngest on the crew?
We're all kind of we're about the same as far as like age-wise and experience-wise, but.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But somebody still had to empty the garbage. Another person had to go cook. Yeah. Captain had to fill out a report and then you go on the next call.
Exactly.
And that's all in a 24-hour shift. So I think it's great to talk about because people, right? People probably go, oh, that was a great call. And then you go, oh, you didn't know about the three other after that we had to go through and do. Let's talk about training a little bit. Like you guys, you train pretty well. And obviously being a paramedic, you keep up with your skills. And first of all, well done. If I didn't say that earlier on, I think it's so cool to talk to people that make a rescue or have a great impact on these calls. Because that's it's like our Super Bowl. We don't get many opportunities. So we train for that 3 to 5 minutes. You know, and all those books you read, Cap, like you were thinking four steps ahead. So what do you guys do and focus on a daily basis just to make yourselves better and to you know, be able to respond like you did?
I mean, some of it just comes down to preparation. Like you said, training, we make sure our gear's in order, you know, make sure that, like you said, we make sure we're chained up that day. It snowed 3 feet overnight. We knew we were going to need chains. I mean, it's all the little things that kind of add up to make yourself successful. So.
Amen.
Preparation of the station, right? Like we had all night, we were up plowing snow, you know, with our little snow plow truck. And just so we could get out of the station to the road, because the county doesn't plow our stations for us. So we do that ourselves. And then, then we can at least get to the road to get somewhere we need to go. I mean, I think it's important for paramedics to know their protocols and know what, you know, the book says. And if you do those things right, you'll stay out of trouble.
Stick to the basics. Just follow the protocols. Yeah. Yeah. But the whole thing about the radios too, does that happen a lot? Or is that something like, all right, if our radios aren't working, this is how I got to respond or this is what I got to do?
That had never happened to me before.
Oh, really?
Where that repeater went down. I've had other repeaters go down. That one had never gone down. It was like bulletproof, I thought. And I guess with 3 feet of snow, something happened to it. And that was 3 feet here. We're at 50...
almost 6,000 feet.
Yeah, 5,800 feet. And then you go up where, you know, the repeaters are, you're looking at 10,000 feet. So quite a bit higher. And they were probably getting 8 to 10 feet of snow up there. I mean, ridiculous amounts, right? So, it was kind of unprecedented for me. But you just go to your backup. And
your backup's backup. And when it all fails,
right. You go Plan A harder. No, Plan B.
Yeah. Well, I think what was next? Smoke signals after that? I mean, you might like, hey, figure that out, yeah. Right? You figure it out.
My battalion chief Adams up to the call just because he knew that we were having comms issues and he knew we were going to need help. So he added himself to the call. I didn't have to request him. But that was super helpful. And I mean, that's just kind of what we all do, right? Like,
yeah,
we all come together to help each other and help out the citizens. That's why we do this job. The paychecks are nice. The 4 days are great. But that's what we're really here to do, right? Is help people out.
Yeah, and to be able to respond when they need it, right? A little. So this mm-hmm. this hopefully this call was kind of satisfying, right? You sat down and you went, you know what, guys, we did a good job. You know, nice work. And then boop, there goes the next call. And you're like, yeah. And then someone messes up that one. And then, that, right, then you're back at the table going, where are you on that one?
Yeah. So just going back to your question, like it is good because things did go well. And it is satisfying to like know that we had such a high profile call. And because we've trained, because we have these systems in order, it actually all went really well. It went as expected. And I wouldn't have changed anything either. It's great. I mean, obviously, other than the fact that it happened, but I wouldn't have changed our response. Everyone worked together. We had multiple agencies, like between the sheriff's office, the Care Flight, who was the medical, the helicopter response, you know, North Lake Tahoe, us. We all seamlessly worked together. It went really well.
Yeah, and now you're transferring that onto like the next shift. So hey, if the repeater goes out, the repeater will never go out, Cap. Yes, it will. Right, and I think that's the other important part here. We train for those things that haven't happened yet, and sometimes we can get in a lull because you just think, well, that'll never happen, and then it does. And yes. And that's another thing why it's great to have you guys, because you overcame that through training and asking those questions. So commend you on that, man. Nice work, you guys. But let's talk about now he comes back, surprises you guys, correct? Like a year later, did he come back to the firehouse?
He didn't come back to this firehouse. He came to another one, which is actually bigger and holds more people. And our retired friend, who is a friend of his, I think, just made the suggestion that we do go to a different house. Alex was actually off that day. And Engineer John was also off that day. I happen to be the only one working, so I'm the only one that actually got to shake his hand.
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah. Jeremy Renner, if you're listening to this, can you just stop in the firehouse?
Yeah, he was on his way to do some filming thing, so it was like it had to be done. That was the only free day he had that he was going to be in town. So, I mean, we understand that, too. He's busy.
Okay. Yeah. So we saw the picture. He obviously mentioned you guys when he went on one of the night shows and everything else. Like, did you get a little bit of guff from people, you know, within the department at all? Like,
yeah, you know? I mean, yeah, just the usual, you know, the ribbing and everything else. But yeah, I took a flack, but it's all good. It's all in fun. It's good.
What's the most creative kind of flack you got? This is what I love about the fire service, because guys are pretty creative.
That's a good question. Definitely the word Hawkeye was thrown out a lot, you know. You say Hawkeye and all that stuff.
Yeah, I love the joke, like he, when he went on I think it was one of the Tonight shows, they're just like, well, like I said, we know the most we know the toughest Avenger by far, right? You know, yeah. Takes on a snowcat, survives now.
That's,
you know,
right.
But it's cool to see, I think, you know, a celebrity do that, because I think they realize, hey, the sacrifices that we make sometimes, mm-hmm. and I don't think the rest of the population, you know, sees that. Mm-hmm. From a family standpoint, you know, like, hey, how was your shift, honey? How did that go when you came home?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's like, oh man, I actually was like pretty nervous about the HIPAA thing at first. So I told my wife I had a really high profile patient, and that's about as far as it went at first. And so once the can't kind of started to come out, obviously it didn't take long, you can imagine, but then it was like, yeah, that was us. And the word spread pretty quickly. So
but. Yeah. Cap, did you take some guff at all, from family or other shifts on this?
You know, not too much. Family was super interested just because my in-laws are from Modesto, and that's where Jeremy is also from originally. So he's like a local hero to those folks. And so they all wanted to know about it, you know, and I, I, like Alex at first, was just like, well, yeah, I can't really talk about it. And, but they all knew. They put two and two together. They know where I work. They know where my coverage area is. It was a new story right away. So they all kind of knew what was going on.
Did you guys get any follow-up on to his condition at all? You know, any from the medical side, were you getting like a little bit of updates as far as?
Yeah, they actually did a good job of keeping us in online, in the know. And then I had an opportunity to transport him from the hospital to the airport when he got flown out to Los Angeles for further care. So after he left Reno, I was able to help. I was able to transport him, and that was good because we got to talk a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. A lot of times we don't think about it until someone else brings it up, like, hey, whatever happened to that person? Mm-hmm. And then you go, oh, shoot, what did happen? And then it kind of eats away at you a little bit because you want to know from a care standpoint, could I have done something different, you know, and affected that outcome? And, you know, it's good that they were at least keeping you guys up, because did you have second guesses at points?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you always wonder if you can do more, right? And you also want a validation of what you're thinking as a provider. You know, how bad was the injury, and was I incorrect in my assessment, thinking these were all the things that were a problem? And so, of course, yeah, we'd love to have that feedback. We'd love to have that follow up, and we were kept in the loop, and that was really helpful to us for future training and. The next call, because there's always that next call. So
an hour later, there was that next call, right? Yep. Yeah. And that's the other part. We just don't get any rest on it. You know, Cap, this is a question for you. You know, as you're seeing your guys work there, you also are a paramedic. I mean, part of you kind of thinking, hey, are we doing this? Are we doing that? Or you let your guys do it. You know, I'm now in that front seat, so I know how that's right. Like. I want to get back in there, right?
Yeah, I mean, Alex isn't a new paramedic. He's been a paramedic as long as I've been in the fire service. So I'm certainly a junior paramedic to him. I only went to paramedic school 12 years ago. And Alex, when did you go to paramedic school?
20 years ago.
20 years ago. So
Yeah, they're still using
horses. I'm not going to tell Alex anything that he doesn't know, it turns out. So, and this is not my job anymore. Right? Like, I'm not kicking people out to, you know, start an IV. These guys depend on me to make sure that the helicopter arrives, that an ambulance gets there, that a chief officer can come help with communications. So we as company officers have that responsibility to them, because we're here to help them do their job. Right.
Yeah.
I had an assistant chief one time tell me that, nobody in the fire service is more important than anybody else, but there's one position that's more important than every other position, and that's the firefighter paramedic sitting in the back. And everybody else at the fire department is here to help them do their job, because they're the ones that are mitigating incidents, they're the ones that are actually putting out the fires, and they're the ones that are treating the patients properly.
Yep, they're the ones providing the service.
Absolutely.
Right, they're the ones, like, report doesn't happen if they don't do their job, you know, and I agree. And it's still hard being in that front seat, because you still want, you know, right. Cause you probably came back. You're like, I didn't really do much on that call. I was on the radio on my phone the whole time trying to figure that out. Right. Like, but then to see your guys thrive, that's the cool part of that.
Yes, and absolutely.
The Fire Store, equipping protectors with passion. Every decision we make as a company is about you, our customer. We wouldn't be where we are today without you. And we don't take that lightly. We understand that having the right gear can mean the difference between life and death. Our goal is to get you the gear you need, when you need it, at prices you can afford. Visit us at thefirestore.com for everything but the truck. And shop our family of brands, including Streamlight, MSA, Lion, Fleer, and more. Now let's get back to the show.
So going back through, you guys did a great job with that. You kind of probably did some after actions. Thought about your care that you provided. You guys work really well together. But in the big picture now, going apart from this, right? Like, so that's something that you guys really thrived at. You succeeded. What are the things, like, individually are you working on to just stay better and stay up with your skills every day?
especially in the medical realm, right? There's always ongoing training, right? We're constantly having to research, take CEs, all those different things. And so obviously that's happening. I mean, every time it snows big, we talk about it. Like, mm-hmm. what's our response? Our, you know, like we have chains on our engine right now because it snowed yesterday. And like, so do we, you know, it's all those things. It's all the preparation, the contingencies. And, you know, there's a fire service is like full of contingencies. And so we're just constantly thinking about what's next. And my, obviously my perspective is different from the captain's perspective, but, you know, again, making sure all my medical equipment's good. Do I have enough blankets for, again, for these cold exposures and different things like that? And there's always something to be training and working on and bettering ourselves for.
Cap, what about you from a big picture standpoint to keep you guys fresh, right?
Feels like there's always training going on in these days, you know. And, I mean, the department's getting better about it and the whole service is getting better about it. You know, you have guys that you take vacation and go to fire conferences now to take nozzle forward or whatever, and that's an amazing class. So if you guys get a chance to go, nozzle forward.
I have. Yeah, we're gonna try to get them on the show too.
I that's not something that I saw 20 years ago, and I think fire conferences have evolved from being something that were just for chief officers to sit in classes and talk about budgets to now hands-on training is what makes those conferences popular and makes people want to go to.
Yeah. And relaying information, I think is pivotal because, you know, and that's why another reason why I'm excited. Cause like, okay, someone may not have a snowcat, but they may have some similar situation where they'll go like, okay, yeah, I got to think about the temperature now. I got to think about what's going on with this, with their body's reaction to this 5 degrees in snow. We really need to get that med unit here. I know I'm going to have to drive. My guy's going to have to go back. Like, I think the more we learn from each other, the better our responses in general. And we had a chief leave has been on a couple of times, and he's always used situations where he's like, I don't know enough about escalators. And then they had an escalator fire. So he took his crews and looked at escalators. You know, like for you guys, people are probably listening to this down in Florida and going, what are chains on tires, by the way? So for engines, you got to know how to efficiently put your chains on your engines in order to get through the snow and ice. And if you're not proficient with that, or they fall off a lot. So you got to know how to fix those. Comms, you said, I've never heard of the repeaters going down. So now I'm going to go ask the question back at my firehouse. Like, what happens if our repeaters go down? Or, you know, what if we can't hear each other in a building? What do we do? You know, so things like that, I think, are really important to transfer on to others. And again, you guys, thank you for at least sharing that. You know, as far as the fire service, since you got their ear, what other things do you want to tell them? You know, what information and you know, you guys have almost been in both 20 years. You've seen the change. And everybody says, oh, it's a fire service. People don't want to train and people want to be better. And it's the next generation. I beg to differ because we've talked to so many unbelievable leaders. We talked to you guys who say, hey, you just got to keep doing what you're doing and work every single day. Like, what else would you guys want to transfer to the rest of the fire service listening?
I mean, you got to stick with it, and mental health is important, and if you need that help, go get it. You know, don't wait for something bad to happen.
Yeah. I love that. That's been a good shift in the fire service. The whole mental health awareness is really good. And yeah, we're at a relatively slow station, but you never know. You could have this incident just about anywhere, right? It's even a really slow station like ours, and we're in a relatively rural area, even though we're in Reno, but like it's our district covers a lot of wilderness, all these different things. And so you just, again, like how would you expect to have a Hollywood star injured in your rural district in Reno, Nevada? You know, and that's why we train, right? That's why we're constantly preparing ourselves for the what if and the unknown. And I think that's why it's important not to get complacent and to always keep your skills up. And that's just you know, again, you just never know. And that's a great thing about the job too, right? It's like, it keeps it lively and exciting. So
yeah, no two shifts are the same, right? Yep. You're going to get crap regardless of what you do, whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing. So you better just have a solid conscience. And, you know, a buddy of mine told me this joke and they said, I got prepared by in the fire service because I used to try to hold the flashlight from my dad as he fixed the car. I think that's like the perfect kind of analogy. You know, because you got to have some thick skin, but you also have to identify when you need to decompress and to talk. Did you guys have a debriefing after this?
We kind of did one amongst ourselves. We definitely talked it through and made sure we're all good. And we again, like you were asking about going over, we went over the call and by detail, just made sure, could we have done anything differently? And so, but as far as like a formal one, no, we did not. But
okay. Yeah.
We have those resources. The nice thing about Truckee Meadows, we have those resources. And if we had needed or felt like it was something that we were suffering from or something, we have those resources. We work for a good organization that way.
I'm glad you guys mentioned that, because along with all the continuing education we do, it doesn't mean anything if you don't take care of yourselves. And I think the fire service has really started to understand that a little bit. You guys doing your job in a high profile situation, I think helps the public understand a little bit more about what we go through and see. And so well done, fellas. So now that celebrity thing is over with, nicknames have probably been given. Apparently you were even on Diane Sawyer. Is that right? Like, what's the coolest thing that kind of came from this besides this podcast?
I don't know. It kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier. We were just doing our job, you know, like I prefer the less limelight and everything else. So, I mean, I think the recognition of the fire service is the coolest thing to come out of it though, to answer your question. I mean, it's important that people know what we do, and a lot of people don't know or think about what we do until they need us, right? Mm-hmm. So to see the exposure of what is possible, what we have, the services we offer, and the situations we're put in has been good, I think, for the public in general.
I mean, yeah, definitely this is the coolest thing that's happened since it's happened. And it's the same reason as Alex, you know, this is about our industry. It's about us. You know, I'm glad that the public recognizes what our agency did, but I don't want to be the face of that. But I'm happy to talk to anybody in the service about it.
And that's why we're doing your podcast, is because we're all on the same page, right? And we're not, you guys understand what we're doing and what we're here for. And I agree.
Yeah. You don't get the old, like, it's 5 degrees. You have 3 feet of snow. Comms didn't work. We're waiting for the med unit. And, you know, and I'll emphasize, there's people that go, yeah, that's a horrible wait. You know, you do what you can, but that it is a horrible wait, you know, right. Been there before. And, you know, so that's the cool part. Like you said, like, so our listeners can relate to that, you know, driving chains now to the hospital, you're thinking, God, we're going to have to do some more interventions here because we're not going to get them there. Cause you know, what's your transport time, by the way, from like where that was to like a hospital, or you took them to helicopter, correct?
Yeah. We flew them out of there. Okay. I mean, that day at 25 miles an hour to renowned regional, boy, yeah, 45 minutes to an hour and a half, anywhere in there.
So flight time was much shorter. And that's why, like, Cap said, he ordered a helicopter right off the bat because we knew that helicopter could be there in 10 minutes.
So, do you guys set up the landing zones quite often? I mean, how often are you guys calling for helicopters?
I mean, it kind of depends. So our friends from North Lake Tahoe, the engine crew helped, they set up the landing spot. And then the ambulance came to the scene, which was, I don't know, maybe half mile off the highway in the neighborhood. And so they helped us there. Drove over to the landing zone, put them on the Care Flight helicopter, and they got them out. But
so yeah, maybe like what, a quarter mile to the landing zone, but it was far enough away, and it was all the snow and everything contributed to the difficulty of getting. So it was like maybe a 10-minute drive to the landing zone. But had we tried to drive them in the ambulance, it would have been a really major delay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, long time there. Hey guys, you know why I got you here? What do you guys see as the biggest challenge that we're facing? You know, not only at Truckee Meadows, but in the fire service. What are you guys seeing as trends? And you know, and I'm just selfishly doing this because who else do you want to see on this podcast besides yourselves? Is really what I'm asking.
Yeah.
But I think that's another cool thing about this is that we can ask other firefighters and people that are in it, because you guys know. You see what, you know, based on what you're seeing, where you are, like, what would you say is the biggest challenge?
Hiring is one of our biggest challenges, strangely enough. Like, when we got in the fire service, you're like selling your soul to get hired. And now it's much more difficult to find qualified people. But then, yeah, on top of that, it's just the normal diversity of calls, right? We live in a place where we can have all the calls, you know, between from high rise all the way down to trench rescue to backcountry avalanche rescue to all that kind of stuff. And just keeping your skills up is a challenge, you know?
Yeah, for sure that is. And I know hiring has been something, right? What firefighters want. Surveys said that last year. Chiefs mm-hmm. that come on are saying, yep, we're seeing that, you know, when we got hired 20 years ago, you, like you said, you had to sell your soul. It's very true. It's like 1,300 people and they're hiring five or whatever.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Are gone. You know, Cap, what are you seeing?
I'm seeing difficulties with hiring for sure, but also retention. I mean, we've had some people here that were 5-10 year firefighters that worked for years to get this job. And then after 5 or 10 years, we're like, I'm going to go to a different industry. And I think it's not quite as bad at our department because we have some slow stations. So you can kind of go be busy for a little bit and then go learn to sleep again somewhere else. But certainly a lot of the cities are just getting hammered with calls and you work people 48 hours straight with no sleep. They can only put up with that for so long. I mean, your body's going to break down and your mind's going to break down. And maybe that's why we have mental health problems that we do.
It is a major reason. Yeah. You know, because you need that sleep to process it. What do you guys think is a solution to that? I mean, a lot deeper than just, you know, like, hey, man, we just, but that's what this is what I love doing. I love seeing what people think because everybody's seeing something a little different, but it comes back. There's a huge similar theme there, you know? So, I mean, there's no wrong answer, but I mean, what do you guys think from being in it for 20 years, what can help?
Yeah, I mean, budgets. I had a friend one time told me in the fire service, everything can be fixed with time and money. Time's the easy part. You just got to find the money and the will to want to do something with it. We work for a fairly progressive department and we're lucky there, but I have friends that work at cities around here that, you know, they've got it pretty rough and they have the same amount of firefighters now that they did in the 60s or 70s, and Northern Nevada has grown, you know, we're 4 or 5 times what we were back in those days as far as population. And every house is busier. I think that probably happens, you know, across the nation. I was talking to a friend of mine from Minneapolis Fire the other day, and he said, man, we're just getting hammered with calls. Like, it's just nonstop. And they still only have 19 stations there, which is, I don't know, like the same they had in the 50s or something like that.
Yeah. Yep. Well, yep. Right. And we're getting called now for more things than we ever have. Or you guys been in for 20 years and it used to be, you know, fires and more emergency situations. And, you know, that's one of the cool parts is we don't say no, but it's also one that could wind up really, really stressing us out and over the top. So it's a balance that we have to do. And I appreciate your guys' honesty with that. And like, yeah, you're like, I didn't sign up for this, man, but thanks so much. You know, not only for stepping up and doing what you guys did when you needed to and putting a very positive kind of, I guess, a simulation with the fire service with what you guys did in that particular case with Renner, but then also doing what you do every day and staying positive and keep working to improve. And I think if anybody's listening to this, take those things because you never know when you're going to need that skill. So better stay up on it. Take care of each other. Take care of yourself. Again, thanks, guys. Well done. If you listeners are just listening to this, you can actually watch us on our YouTube channel. You can see that through thefirerescue1.com. Please rate, review, share the show. And again, it's great to have these conversations with members of the fire service. And that's really what we're all about. And you guys, again, really emphasize that because you never know when you're going to need it. So Indeed. Again, you guys, thank you for all of your insights. Thanks for responding and really performing well on your Super Bowl of calls. For those listening, make sure you transfer all the things that you've learned and heard here today by learning something, doing something, and sharing something to make you and those around you better every shift. Thanks for listening, everybody.